You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
We talked to National Party's Michael Woodhouse on immigration reform. The New Zealand government has made crucial changes to the immigration laws in the hopes of decreasing the record-breaking migration figures of 71,300 last year. Immigration Minister Michael Woodhouse has announced the introduction of a salary threshold that aims to target low-skilled migrant workers. 95BFM reporter Kelly Enright spoke to the minister about this controversial change, asking what the change would mean for migrants who are under the threshold and already living in New Zealand.
Well, there'll be no change to the circumstances that they are in now on. So, for example, if they have their partners and children here, that will continue, but they will be subject to the three-year limit. So if they've been here some time, they'll be able to stay for a maximum of 3 years. If they don't qualify for residence under the new threshold policies, then they'll also be required to comply with a stand-down period.
When these changes do occur and we see the threshold, you know, people not in low-skilled jobs not able to come over anymore, if there is those in high-skilled jobs coming over, will they automatically be able to bring their families and children, or is that changing
as well?
Yes,
they will. And I think it's also important to acknowledge that with the number of jobs that are being created in the growing economy, it will still be necessary, I think, in some industries and in some parts of the country for those lower skilled, lower paid workers to come in. They just need to be clear about the conditions under which they are coming and the time limits that apply.
So in terms of finding a balance in the intake of migrants, last year we saw, you know, more than 70,000 immigrants come in. Ideally, what number are you looking for?
Well, the first thing to say is that that 70,000 number is on net migration. So that includes the movements of Kiwis and Australians. And it's also driven very strongly by the high number of working holiday makers that we have now. In fact, over the last few years, the number of people that have come in under labour market tested work visas has actually dropped quite considerably. So as for whether or not there's a target, or I can give you an estimate of the number, the drop that would occur in net migration, it's hard to tell. It'll depend on the sorts of decisions that they make. So for example, if there are a large number of students coming in into Auckland, say on sub-degree qualifications with an expectation that they could have a pathway to residence under the skilled migrant category, that's not going to be there for them. However, they may make different decisions. They may still come in and they may study different things that give them a better chance of staying. The number of people who come in with partners and children, that will also drop, but it's a little hard to estimate how much that'll be. I would say it's in the thousands, but we're not putting a target on it.
So those students that do come in and decide to maybe study in more high-skilled jobs, what's it going to look like for them going straight from studying and not being able to meet the threshold, perhaps? What does that mean for them? Do they have to go back to their home countries?
They're still eligible for post-study work visas, and that will still be the case. But if they find themselves after 3 years in the situation where they haven't reached that threshold, yes, they will need to go home. They will be subject to that stand-down period.
In the changes you're making, there was a clause for the 4,000 dairy workers in the South Island for the easier pathway to residency. Why is that?
Well, it's not just dairy workers, although they are a significant proportion. Unemployment is very low in the South Island, and we've got ourselves into a situation where there are a large number, 4,000 as you say, workers and their family members who have been here for a long time, but they don't have a pathway to residence. I think it's fair that we do clear that situation up, that unblock the situation that we're in, but also to make sure that we don't get back into the same situation in a few years' time where more people come under those conditions. So that's why we've made the changes by putting in place those thresholds. Where we still need the labour in places like Canterbury for the rebuild, Nelson Marlborough for the very strong wine industry growth and for farming, we will need some of those workers. They just need to be very clear about what they can expect when they come in and when they'll need to go home.
So when you do, you know, you're wanting to have less people in Auckland, obviously, how do you plan to sort of disperse or spread out the immigrants throughout New Zealand or necessarily to places that need it?
Yeah, well, it might not feel it if you're stuck in traffic in Auckland and having to take 2 hours to travel to and from work every day. But actually, it's reasonably highly distributed now. A lot of those workers are in the regions. A lot of the working holiday makers may come through Auckland, but then go to places like Queenstown, Wanaka and Rotorua. It's important that we create the settings that ensure that where the workers are required, they are they are located there. And that is Auckland, but it's also many other parts of the country as well.
So now that these changes will happen and we're wanting to see kind of New Zealanders step into to some of these roles so that there's, you know, a lower unemployment rate, does this mean we see more New Zealanders working low-paid jobs, or does there need to be an increase in minimum wage?
Well, both of those things. I think, firstly, no government's done as much as we have to make sure that those young New Zealanders are placed into work, and that's one of the reasons why, despite the strong growth in net migration, we are seeing a drop in the number of labour market tested work visas. It's also important that I think we recognise that all of us started out in lower paid work. That's generally the pathway. Nobody gets to be the chief executive right from the get-go. And that there are some barriers for many of those job seekers. The jobs aren't where they are. They may not have the skills that are needed to do those jobs. It may not be their first preference. And of course, there's that thorny issue around sort of substance use and whether or not they're putting themselves at risk through recreational drug and alcohol use. Those are all real issues, and we need to remove those barriers one by one.
So disregarding younger workers, but in general, are we going to see, you know, there's exploitation of migrant workers at the moment, we know that. Are we going to see a lot more New Zealanders step into these roles and maybe face the same exploitation?
Well, look, I've worked very hard as both Minister of Immigration and Workplace Relations and Safety to ensure that the Labour Inspectorate and the Immigration Compliance Team are working hard to prevent and then prosecute that sort of behaviour. It's simply unacceptable to me that anybody would be treated in that way. Earlier this year, I announced a stand-down regime where if an employer was found in breach of minimum employment standards, they simply wouldn't have access to the overseas workers. Mm. That access is a privilege. And if they abuse that privilege, they will lose it for between 6 months and 2 years. Now, that might not seem like much, but for some organisations and some industries, they're relying very heavily on that, and the blocking off of that access could be devastating for their businesses. So I think that will have a significant impact. Also, of course, we have one of the highest minimum wages in the world, both in real terms and relative to our average wage. So, yep, there are concerns around that sort of lower paid work, but I think we're putting in place things to prevent further exploitation.
So you've said previously, you've recorded to say, you know, there is a risk of corrupt behaviour that may increase with these changes in terms of employers, and that you're wanting to check, you know, that the government will be working to check that this isn't the case, you know, during and after the visa applications, like corrupt employers, you know, paying the threshold wage and then maybe forcing their workers to work longer hours. How are you going to regulate that or check up on that?
We've significantly increased the resources available to the Labour Inspectorate by about 2/3 since we came to office. And as I say, we're getting immigration and the Labour teams to work much more closely together. But we'll also have to change the way in which they work. So we test the veracity of the salaries that are being offered when the visa is applied for. But we'll also need to go in and check after that, while those workers are here, that the commitments that are made by employers are being honoured. So there'll be a little bit more effort there, and I think that's going to be an investment rather than a cost.
Speaking of investments, how does the government plan to support and fund New Zealand businesses that it hopes will employ more Kiwis and invest in their training?
Well, we're doing a lot to ensure that trade training, for example, has been significantly invested, Maori and Pacifica trade training in particular. We have a number of schemes around the country where there is a shortage of workers to encourage those industries to engage those young people. It's certainly been successful in parts of the South Island in the farming sector. At Auckland Airport, for example, they've got a very good program which the government supports, which are taking young South Aucklanders into work in that precinct. And that's been very successful. So we'll continue to identify and invest in those sorts of initiatives.
Just to finish up, have the recent changes in the Australian immigration law reform had any prompt on New Zealand law reform, or is that solely...
No, it's highly a coincidence that 24 hours before I made my announcement, they made some changes to what they call the 457 visa. That's their essential skills visa. On the same day that I made my announcement, having taken away the 457, they put back two other visa categories.
Right.
And they, you know, they're sort of dancing on the head of a pin as well. But I think it's a coincidence that those two announcements came this week. I've been working on the announcements that we made yesterday for months, and so it's not something you just pop out of out of the woodwork quickly.
Yep.
They've got to be well thought through, and in particular, as you describe, a balance to ensure that a strongly growing economy isn't being compromised by the failure to get the workers we need, but at the same time putting Kiwis first.
That was National Party's Michael Woodhouse on immigration reform targeting low-skilled migrant workers. Reporter Kelly Enright also spoke to the Council of Trade Union President Richard Wagstaff about the proposed change to the immigration law.
Yeah, well, I think the government's been under a lot of pressure with New Zealand immigration due to a number of factors. One is that there's, you know, a real issue where New Zealand workers and unemployment remains very stubbornly high, and there's a concern that in some occupations at least the settings aren't right, and it means we're having, you know, migrants come in and take jobs that New Zealanders would otherwise be getting. So that's a concern they're trying to address. I think also the population of New Zealand, from a government point of view, is putting huge pressure on public services and health services and education and so on. And so they're just trying to tighten things up a bit. And these changes reflect the fact that they have acknowledged that there is an issue. From our point of view, there's also an issue around migrants being badly treated and exploited at work. And, you know, we need to address that as well.
So do you think if there is less immigrants taking, you know, New Zealand jobs, and we get more locals into these jobs, do you think that, you know, the exploitment of low-skilled workers or low-paid workers will change?
I think it's a step in the right direction. And, you know, I want to be very clear, you know, the CTU supports migrant workers and their rights. They need to be well-treated. And we also completely agree that for some occupations, New Zealand, you know, badly needs to find people to fill those jobs, and that's especially highly skilled jobs. But, yeah, we do think that there are areas where migrants are probably putting pressure on existing workers, on their wages, and also taking a lot of the work that's there and making it harder for New Zealanders to get jobs. And so if that was managed differently, it could improve the situation for New Zealanders and unemployed New Zealanders, and it could put some pressure on employers to improve the conditions of work, because we know that very often migrant workers are, for one reason or another, they're vulnerable. They don't know and have the same access to enforce their rights at work as existing New Zealanders are. And we know that there are some employers who exploit that and will continue to exploit that if they can. So changing these rules could help with that. But our issue with the latest announcements are that they don't address the burgeoning numbers of people on students on and temporary work visas, which is tens of thousands of New Zealanders. And those are the ones that are really hitting the low-skill jobs and making an impact there.
So if there was, if these changes were to happen and we saw, you know, less immigrants coming over and taking these jobs, in terms of students, you know, studying and not meeting this threshold, I mean, how are we going to see, you know, students that are training in like highly skilled areas and industries but not, you know, straight out of university meeting this threshold?
Well, I mean, if you're talking about, there's no problem about New Zealand people, New Zealanders attending, you know, university and going out and getting work. They don't need a visa. It's for overseas people who are not New Zealand residents. They're the ones who are going to struggle. They may have to, I mean, it's all about getting things in balance. I mean, if there's excessive numbers of those people and there's New Zealanders who are out of work as a result, and that's a very careful calculation, then they may need to, you know, basically return back to their home country to find work, find a way of extending their skills and getting work experience. If they're New Zealand residents, that's not an issue. The point is that this needs to be, it's not a question of having migration on or off. It's a question of having the right balance and just having the right numbers of people to supplement the labour requirements we have as a country, to be fair, to treat people properly, but not to sort of flood things out to the extent that they drive that migration drives down wages and puts people on the dole and out of work. And so it's about finding that balance. That's what we're trying to do here.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95bfm.com/bcasts.